Welcome to episode 12 of Figuring Out Fanfiction. We started last Friday with an episode on Intro to Fanfic 101, and now we're here on our second episode. I talk about this a lot, but the guests who have come on this podcast have really been nothing short of amazing. They come from different fields and backgrounds, across ages, transcending opinions and experiences. And today, like some of my earlier episodes, comes from a more academic perspective. So let's get into it. Part of what's exciting about producing this podcast is finding scholars who have their own relationship to fan fiction, both in their research and extending into their own personal stories. Today's guest knows this double-sided mirror well, and we'll be speaking about her story and her takeaways from research. And so with that, I want to welcome Brianna Dim, an information science PhD candidate at the University of Colorado at Boulder. She also works at the Internet Rules Lab at CU Boulder, which studies governance and technology. Welcome, Brianna, and thank you for coming on.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here and to be talking with you today.
Thank you. So actually, I do want to start with asking you, you know, I looked through your body of work before today. And, you know, since I've looked through it, you know, looking through the lenses of fan fiction and its communities is really your focus. But I wanted to know first and foremost where you come in. So what your own personal relationship to fan fiction looks like.
So when I was in my teens, you know, I read a lot of fan fiction on the internet just because, you know, that's what teenagers do. Or nerdy teenagers, at least. You know, it's more common nowadays, I think. But, you know, you'd read a story and you'd want to, like, read more, see what other people are writing about characters, and you'd go find it. I was a gay teenager, and so the only place where you could read about gay people was in fan fiction back then. This is, like, I was a teenager, over a decade ago now.
Right. It's been you and me both.
Yeah, it's been a while. So yeah, there was not as much representation around. And if there was representation, it wasn't done well. I remember reading a ton of fan fiction as a teenager about Paige and Alex from Degrassi, The Next Generation, because Degrassi was a trash show where everyone had sad relationships, but the lesbians also had a sad relationship, and that made me sad as a young gay kid. So I would go read fan fiction about it. And there was some Canadian who was writing out like what was happening in the show and posting it on fan fiction websites before it aired in the US. And so I would get ahead of it that way.
Smart.
And I would get very upset because I didn't like the direction the show was going in. So I would end up just like skipping episodes because I was so sad. But yeah, as I got older in my early 20s, I started writing fan fiction. When Legend of Korra was airing, I got a lot more heavily involved in the community on Archive of Our Own and Tumblr. I wrote a lot of fan fiction for the Legend of Korra community when Korra Sami became canon, especially.
Everyone went wild when that happened, I remember.
Yeah, it was a moment in history that felt like a turning point. And I remember the exact hour after the show, that episode went live. And just there's a compilation of reaction videos on the internet that are really good about that, that just show people just losing their minds when that happened. That show just gave us a lot that I think is important. And so, yeah, I wrote a lot of fanfic for that show. I'm writing like one last piece for it right now. but who knows when it'll be done. Me and one of my friends have been working on it for like 4 years now, but we haven't published any of it. It's more of something we started just to like stay close after I moved away for grad school.
Oh, that's actually really sweet.
Yeah. It's our way that we like play and have fun. And that's what fan fiction is for me right now. When I was younger, it was a space to explore my emotions and feelings towards things in a place that was safe, like a lot of young LGBTQ people use it for. And now that I'm older, it's a space where I go to have fun and relax and be part of a community of people who, also are excited about the same shows and books that I'm excited about.
I have seen still, I think, the same iteration of those emotions again and again. Now that I'm older, I like to think, aside from this podcast aside, I've really gained some good friendships over time and just talking about fan fiction and how it's evoked some warm memories and not so warm memories. And actually, to your point about Degrassi, there's actually, I've noticed that you would hope that with the amount of LGBTQ representation that's rising in media, that there will no longer be such trash representation. That's still a thing that's definitely still ongoing. And so you see people who are, I see people who are younger than me now writing fan fiction because they're frustrated with the turnout of their favorite shows or their favorite books.
And that's the thing about fan fiction is you don't write it if you're 100% satisfied with. I have a lot of desire to write fan fiction about things where it's like, maybe it wasn't perfect, but maybe it was still good, or maybe it wasn't perfect and it was bad, but there's room to grow and explore and think through some things that are interesting.
It's really the same. I've spoken to people who have been fan fiction writers in the 70s, and it's incredible to see that their same sentiments hold true today. And I think that's really, I think that really shows an integral part to fan fiction that'll never really fade away. Ever. Yeah. So now that we know your relationship to fan fiction, I'd like to hear about your research and specifically what you study and why you chose to study that.
So I had not initially been planning to go into just researching fan communities when I joined Casey Fiesler in the Internet Rules Lab. What happened was that I had finished my master's degree and I wanted to study online communities and how they communicated with each other. And through some convoluted back channeling, I ended up talking to Casey Fiesler, who runs the Internet Rules Lab. And she and I had something in common in that we both were part of online fan communities and we understood fan communities. We understood fandom. We were both old fandom like folks. We were never in the same fan communities, but we had that same shared language with each other. And she had recently won some awards for some work she had done on writing about Archive of Our Own and online fan communities. And so when she brought me on board as a PhD student, she thought I would be doing like research on like literacy and accessibility in online communities. And I was instead very, very interested in marginalized groups in online communities. And we had some data on fan communities already. She had a ton of interviews she had done. And so I started looking at that. And then I started organizing my own research agenda, and we decided that because of how funding was going for her and her lab, that it would be really good for me to look at privacy and ethics issues in fan communities, because that was a space I was familiar with and I could get into fairly easily. Part of doing ethnographic or qualitative research is, being a trusted person within the community or knowing a trusted person to go talk to in the community. And because I was a trusted person within my own community, I had a good path to get in and talk to people. And so we talked to some folks about privacy and safety concerns that they had. And I noticed as I was talking to people, a lot of their concerns came from being individuals from marginalized backgrounds. So a lot of LGBTQ people, a lot of people with disabilities, some people of color, less so in that first round that I talked to. And that's just because as a white person, I don't always have access to where the fandoms of color are. And so I need to work in my own practice to sort of bridge that gap and learn if I can be representative for those voices. As I talked to those people and heard these concerns people had about I would get kicked out of my, people would say to me, I would get kicked out of my house if my parents found out that I draw LGBTQ fan art. Like they would talk about being in the closet. These are all legal adults I talked to, people who are 19, 20, 21, talking about how they were so disempowered in their offline lives. And fandom was a space where they could feel empowered and find community, find resources, connect in really important ways. And that became the thing I was really, really interested in, is how do you make technology do better for people who are using it to sort of uplift themselves and empower their own communities? And what are we as researchers and designers doing that is possibly making that harder for them or possibly putting them in danger? And so I'm researching fandom right now, and I love fandom, and I'm glad that I got to write about it so much. But I think my future research trajectory, after I hopefully land a tenure track job somewhere, is going to start branching into other online communities where marginalized groups gather to sort of heal from or hide from or find ways out of dangerous communities that they might be stuck in elsewhere in their lives.
What are some examples of those communities that might be outside fan fiction?
Ex-evangelical communities where people are leaving toxic home situations, where they have family that's trying to control them through religious practices that the young person might not necessarily agree with anymore. Or people exiting cult communities. There's a lot of online resources dedicated to that. People exiting domestic abuse situations, spaces where people are trapped in their offline lives. They'll typically find a niche community online where they can escape that entrapment, at least for a short time. There are a lot of privacy and security concerns that come with leveraging those online resources in that way. And I would like to help make it easier for people to get out and find different spaces to be in if that's what they want to do.
That's, I think, a really good point or a story showing that over time your research interests change, but at the same time, at the root of it, you're really focused on one thing. And I think that's where a lot of researchers, hopefully more researchers, come in to really advocate for safety and for advocate for acceptance within communities. Right.
And all this research trajectory stems from fandom because all of these situations I'm talking about are situations that you find in fan communities as well, that I've observed, that I have data on, that.
With that being said, you have such an incredible publishing work, looking through all of it. And to anyone who's listening, I really recommend that you look at Brianna's Google Scholar page because there's so much you can learn from it. And from everything you've studied, interviewed, analyzed, what are the most surprising takeaways that you've discovered?
Oh gosh. That's an interesting question, because what was not necessarily surprising, but sort of just so beautiful and affirming for me was discovering how much this matters to people. And I would always go as my academic self, not as like my fandom persona. And people would often come up to me and say, "Hi, you interviewed me. I want to say thank you for this thing that you published." That has been a really lovely thing to experience, to sort of realize that, even if people in the research community think that my work is just only slightly interesting, there are people in the world who, this matters to them more than anything in the world. And that's really touching to me, that I'm able to do a service to them and provide them with that.
I've felt the same when I started this podcast. People within my own personal network, I think you might feel the same, but especially since we're both a little bit on the older side in terms of fan fiction fans. But there was a lot of negative stigma associated with fan fiction, I remember as I was growing up.
I remember just glaring daggers at a colleague of mine when I was in my master's program, when he mentioned in a meeting that I write fan fiction and how that's so cool and how we should be doing more about it in the English department faculty meeting. It was like, how dare you out me like this to these
Right.
people who teach literature? They're going to think I'm a fool.
No, I get that. I mean, I've been with my current partner for nearly 3 years now, and he'll sometimes be like, "I've known you for a long time now. You can show me your fan fiction." And I can't. Like, even though I know he's not going to judge, I absolutely can't. It's just the thought of it is making me so scared,
Yeah,
I
I actually My wife, when she and I first met, I was very honest about what I researched. And there is a lot of cringy fan fiction I wrote in my early 20s that's been lost to the annals of the internet. It's on like fanfiction.net. Maybe it's been deleted. Maybe it hasn't. I just haven't gone to go check. I don't care. I forget. I don't even remember the login password. I don't even remember what the exact username was. I'm not going back there. And I would never want anyone to see that fan fiction ever again. But okay. my current stuff on my AO3 profile, when my wife and I first started dating, I explained my research because I had just started out at CU Boulder at the time. And she was like, oh, well, you're a writer. What do you write? And I was like, oh, here, you can like see some of the fanfic that I write. And I figured that would be like a good test of like, you know, if she can like handle and accept that I write that stuff. And I don't actually write anything that scandalous, honestly. I'm actually very open about my fanish identity in like interpersonal relationships with other academics now, because now it gives me street cred as a researcher. It's like, oh yeah, Brianna, she's hardcore in the ethnography there.
You live it. You literally live it.
Yeah. And like anytime another academic comes to me and says, so I've been thinking about writing fan fiction, I'll be like, here is my pseudonym. Go check out my stuff. Share Amazing. Your stuff with me if you feel comfortable. This is awesome.
I do feel like some of the negative stigma has kind of fallen away, actually.
Yeah, it's a much more common practice among younger people nowadays.
It is. Do you have TikTok?
Yeah, I'm a lurker on it. My wife's very active on TikTok though.
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned this in past episodes, but it's incredible to me how people have also created fan fiction on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wild to me because, you know, I remember having fan videos, or if you were a Tumblr person, you would mm-hmm. see the like those GIFs and stuff.
Yeah.
People who are my sister's age. So I think a lot of that stigma has fallen away, especially with the popularity of platforms like TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I need to go look at like fan fiction on TikTok, I guess, because I didn't know that was a thing. So I have learned something now. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, some of it out there is surprisingly really good. I mean, so recently I learned the term geriatric Gen Z. And I'm very upset about it. So I guess I'm considered geriatric Gen Z. And so I guess for my geriatric Gen Z self, this is like really new wave, but kind of interesting new wave.
Mm-hmm.
People also take time to download editing tools. And I think some people even learn After Effects to insert themselves. Because you know about the Your Name fan fiction, self-inserts and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The people will edit themselves into a TikTok, and it's
that's
incredible.
That's cool. I don't research TikTok, but a colleague of mine who also like hangs out with me in fandom. Like we knew each other as fandom people before we knew each other as like PhD researchers in information science. Oddly enough. And now she's my lab mate, is the funny part. She does a lot of TikTok research, so I'll tell her to find it or like look at it and then bring me the interesting stuff.
Yeah, give you the exact lowdown on it. Of all of the papers you've published, do you have a specific favorite?
Oh, that's like asking to pick a favorite child.
I've heard the same all throughout every researcher I've ever spoken to.
So I really love a lot of my work for different reasons. I think the paper I love that does not get enough love, like because I love all of them equally, but one that does not get enough love is this paper I wrote called The Burden of Queer Love. And it's a very like, literary analysis of BioWare romances and video games. And it,
wow.
But it's also about design in that like it's a very like, it's a very like, it's kind of like my angry screed at like how video games, how we design inequity into digital experiences. Video games are a very easy way to see that. You know, this is the other soapbox I get on aside from, like, you know, supporting marginalized groups, is that, like, there are these inequalities and hierarchies that we specifically design into our technology, whether that be a video game or a social media platform or an application. We make choices, and those choices determine a hierarchy of who is the ideal user, and then who is secondary, tertiary, and then who cannot use the application. And that's based around things like, you know, interest to identity to, you know, physical capability even. Like my wife has multiple sclerosis, so she has a hand tremor. And there are certain technologies she physically cannot use because they are too sensitive for a hand tremor, or they just don't have accessibility controls that accommodate for that. And so we have these hierarchies that we construct in our technologies. And that article I wrote, The Burden of Queer Love, starts unpacking that as a concept. And then I start poking at it a little bit more in an article that I just submitted for consideration at a journal. And so we'll see what the reviewers think of that.
Okay, hopefully that will get in, I'm expecting, because that sounds really interesting.
And yeah, I'm excited about that one a lot, actually. It's a very close analysis of social media platforms. 2 years of...
I was going to ask, what do you think of the state of accessibility in fan fiction at large?
I think fan communities pay closer attention to and value accessibility a little bit more than some other communities in online spaces. And that's why you find a lot of, you know, people with disabilities in fan communities as opposed to other online communities. You know, Archive of Our Own was built with accessibility in mind from the ground up, so that it would be compatible with accessible technologies like screen readers and all that kind of stuff. You know, if you ever learn how you're supposed to code for accessibility, there's specific tags that you're supposed to put into your HTML and your CSS as you're writing the script for that site. And if you don't put that in the back end, then it's really difficult to navigate using screen reader software or other kinds of accessibility softwares.
I didn't know that piece. I mean, I knew that Archive of Our Own was really meant to be inclusive from the ground up. And to those listening, I will probably be mentioning that article at some point in a future episode. So stay tuned. I think that accessibility piece, I didn't really know about. So I think that really does emphasize that there is a bit more of an inclusive feeling within fanfiction communities beyond from what one may feel, you know, as getting positive feedback, for example, when you publish a piece.
Yeah. You know, fan communities aren't perfect. They have their own problems. They have their own bullies in them, like aunties. People who are anti this ship or anti that ship, or how dare you write about this experience without showing receipts to say that you can. but, you know, I think the toxicity in fandom is, you know, I feel more comfortable in fan communities talking and existing and participating than I would ever feel doing similar low-level, low-stakes activities in any other online community, quite honestly.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I feel a different version of myself emerge when I'm on fanfiction communities or fan communities but the way I present myself on social media in general, at large, is very different. And I think part of that probably comes from acknowledgement, like, we are here because we are very interested or very closely connected with this piece, and we're all here. That's one thing that's linking all of us.
Yeah.
So we accept varying levels of it, you know?
Yeah. I've had an interview participant put it really well once before. The quote was, everyone knows your biggest secret already. It's already out in the open.
Oh.
Because, you know, fandom is about exploring parts of yourself that you don't necessarily explore in professional settings. It's things that you would, like, talk about and share with, like, your close friend group. So, you know, writing about characters in relationships, writing about, you know, complicated feelings. Like, I had a friend write a, like, 30,000 word fan fiction about a character from the show Ruby going through, like, you know, surviving domestic abuse. And, you know, that's not something that you have a conversation about over cocktails. So you have these, like, really, like, intimate topics. And that is the centerpiece for all of your interpersonal relationships in this community. So it's a bit, the barrier is a bit lowered already.
Do you think your relationship to fan fiction has changed since you started studying it?
Oh, hello. Sorry, my cat just joined us.
Welcome.
She's adorable. I typically behave like I used to. I'm maybe a little bit more involved in a leadership role, get more involved in like group projects because I'm just curious from a scientific perspective of like, oh, how does this go? Maybe I should put myself out there and be more involved. Like, I would never have participated in like a zine or in writing for a big bang before. But now I'm like, yeah, let's get involved. Let's see what's going on with the rest of the community. Because one, like, you know, it's fun. But two, I'm also invested from a academic perspective.
If there was one burning question you'd want to answer about fan communities or fan fiction, what would that question be?
I don't know. I just think that it's such a nice place to actively happening. It's just such a fun, almost like a party. Like it is like a vacation. Like you go there and, you know, you don't have to worry about whatever else is going on in the world. You can like just focus on, you know, having fun, doing things that are so creative and interesting and beautiful. And I think fandom is an important space for people to be able to, I want to say the word like to retreat to, but not in like the battle sense, but more in like, you know, I'm going on a retreat. Like it.
Right.
That is something that I think is so good about the space. Been a pleasure to be a part of over the years. And I am honored that I got to write about it as much as I did.
Brianna, it has been incredible to have you. I've learned a lot from you. And I'm really hoping that I'll be reading more of your work. And whoever's listening, you should read more of her work in the future.
If you have any other questions or things you want to talk about, I'm happy to answer more.
If people want to actually reach you and ask any other questions, what's the best place to find you?
They can look me up at CU Boulder's Information Science website. So if you like look me up on my Google Scholar page, it has my affiliation on it and it has all of my work on it. I usually post a preprint of everything that I've written so that people have access to it for free. And the Information Science Department has contact for me on their website.
Thank you, Brianna. I really appreciate it. And I hope the rest of your week goes well.
Yeah, thank you so much.
There's a word that Brianna said that stuck out to me. Ethnographic. I've come across this word a bit recently during my own studies in my master's program. And it's the notion of entering the environment that you're observing to comprehend the natural behaviors around it. And in her case, being part of the community that she studied is not viewed as a drawback. It's considered a strength. And that's because when you walk into your community with your own knowledge, you're able to see the deeper meaning in the behaviors that might seem unfamiliar to the outsider. Questions? Comments? You can reach me on figuringoutfanfiction@gmail.com or you can DM the Instagram @figuringoutfanfiction. I'll be back next week with a new episode. Tune in then. See you next time.